It is Transfiguration Sunday, always the Sunday before we head into the season of Lent. And in this year, we are in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 17, verses 1 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make 3 dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." This is the word of the Lord. Would you join me again silently in prayer? Loving God, as always, it is my prayer that in the following moments, more and more be seen of you and less of me. Amen. So let's start with Jesus. Of course, we can't presume to fully identify with Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God, but there is something we have in common with Jesus, our humanity. As a human being, I suspect that Jesus was probably very tired at this point that this story is this morning. That's usually when he tried to get away for a prayer break to get a mountaintop perspective. As a human being, perhaps he was wondering how effective his ministry had been to date. From the mountaintop, perhaps he could see a crowd gathering, asking one another, "Where did that miracle worker go with his loaves and fishes? We are hungry again." Perhaps he could see crowds gathering, asking themselves, "Where did that healer go? We still have sickness." Perhaps he could see the Pharisees clustered together, plotting against him. Perhaps he could see the rest of the disciples milling about in confusion. Perhaps he wondered, "Do they really understand the cost of following me? Will they follow me as I head for Jerusalem?" If you know what it is like to be tired, if you know what it's like to have people seeking you out for what you can do for them, if you know what it's like to have other people criticizing you and working against you, if you have ever been filled with dread at what lies ahead in life, you may have a little something in common with Jesus. If you know what it's like to feel those things as a direct result of serving God, then you might even have even more in common with Jesus. Those are the words of a commentator writing about the Transfiguration, and I chose to open with it because I think one of the challenges of the Transfiguration is understanding what the heck it's about and how we relate to it. So let's see what we can do about that this morning. First of all, when we talk about the Transfiguration, we're talking about a couple different things going on at once. Jesus, is clothed and shines brightly, so there is some sense that he is changed in some way, materially, so to speak, while he's on the mountain. But at the same time, in that, it's revealing something that was true all along. John's Gospel, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So this is already who Jesus is. It's just being revealed even more. And also, in a lot of ways, it is preparing him for what is to come, and so it's also revealing something that will happen, of course, in Jesus' life and ministry, death, crucifixion, and rising again. So all three of those things are kind of present in a way when we talk about the transfiguration. It's not just one thing. It's almost like a trinity of things. I want to draw your attention to a few things in the text. You know, as a general rule, if you've heard me preach before, if there is something unique about a text, then it's worth talking about. In this case, the way that this story starts 6 days later is unique to Matthew. It is only in Matthew's gospel. It is the only time in the Gospels where something happens after 6 days, so to speak. Now, obviously not the only thing at all that happened after 6 days, but, you know, there are things that are named after however many days. Of course, in Genesis, after 6 days of creation, God said things were very good, but they weren't complete. In Moses, as he is on Mount Sinai, and there are 6 days where he is in God's presence before he receives the word from God. So part of what is going on with that 6 days is that it is recalling the humanity of Jesus, because humanity was created on the sixth day, if you look back to Genesis. But it's also his divinity that will sustain him, lead him to the cross, which is the completion of his ministry. So the 6 days later is a little foreshadowing of what is to come as Jesus comes down the mountain. I talk all the time about context mattering. And in this case, there are, and I want to just highlight Moses when we talk about context, because there are very hard and present similarities between all of the gospel accounts of the transfiguration and the story of Moses on Mount Sinai that I just mentioned. In both stories, the presence of God in the form of a cloud covers the mountain, which is a traditional location for theological things to happen, obviously, up on the mountaintop. In both stories, God's voice provides a clear signal to people that a revelation is taking place. And on Mount Sinai, with Moses, the Torah is given to the people. In the Transfiguration, Jesus is revealed as the living embodiment of God's word. So it's one of those things where Jesus' life and ministry don't happen in a vacuum. You have to know what comes before to understand what's going on and what will come. That is the reason, of course, that Jesus, you know, comes from a place. It's not just he just dropped into the middle of human history with no context. It goes all the way back, and that's part of the parallel that is going on in this story. You probably caught the words that are used in this as far as tying it back to Matthew 3 and the baptism. It is the same words that are used. This is my son with whom I am well pleased. There's a little modification. Listen to him. And so there is an idea or a sense that transfiguration also is united or has to do with baptism in a way as well. There is the baptism story in the beginning of Matthew and Matthew 3, there is the voice that comes, and it's assumed, of course, that people heard that voice speaking because there were other people, but it's explicit here that other people hear God's voice to say, "This is my son with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." The death and resurrection of Jesus, of course, is only understood in fullness in connection with his life and ministry. It all works together. The other thing that I want to highlight that is unique in Matthew's account is this phrase, "But Jesus came and touched them, saying, 'Get up and do not be afraid.'" This touching from Jesus is only in Matthew's account. And there could be any number of significance to it, but this is what one of the things that I saw that I really identified with. One of the commentators writing about this was talking about how there was a difficult time in his life, and a friend suggested that what he really needed, in the midst of that difficult situation was God with hands. In other words, God physically sort of being present in a way. Perhaps you might have had one of those times in your life where it is dark and you're not sure where that light is going to come from. And be it a friend, be it a family member, be it somebody unexpected that you didn't know, offers you God with hands, is present with you in a real way. That touch would have been obviously reassuring from Jesus. And sometimes that is what we need from God via other people or however that comes to us when we are in the midst of difficulty or fear or and I think it's also worth then considering as we hear this story and as we call ourselves followers of God, how we might be God with hands for other people in our lives and in our world. And that is certainly something to consider as we hear these words. So the Hebrew word for glory actually means weight or heaviness. So that partly is speaking to the kind of multiple things going on at once here, if we think about the glory of God. So the idea partly is that the Christian life, we are called certainly to be in fullness of who God created us to be, and there's some happiness with that. But it also means that we bear the cross, as Jesus said, and we have to kind of figure out what that means. Commentator said, maybe this means that when Jesus touches us, it's a heavy touch that acknowledges the suffering and sin intrinsic to the human condition, and yet, at the same time, a healing touch that lets us know that we are not alone in the human condition. God is also in it with us, helping us bear the heaviness. I think we can certainly all testify to the fact that life can be a mixed bag. And not only that, we can have moments of happiness and moments of pain, and we can have them both in the same day. Heck, we can have them in the same hour sometimes. And so part of, I think, what we can take out of the Transfiguration is this idea that God is present in all of those things, but particularly pushing back, and you all know me from my sermons, I'm not real huge on the aspect of martyrdom for God anyway. And so this idea, this theology that can sometimes be present, that we are just suffering for a future glory, I think this text says maybe that's not the way to look at it. Maybe instead we have a relationship with God who is present with us in the suffering and in the glory. Those two are always combined because life is a mixture of those things. Maybe we can partly look at this in a way to say there's no on the mountain or off the mountain. Maybe there is just this life that we have been given. Maybe God is with us in all of those situations. And maybe those situations are filled with grace, no matter whether we are in a good place or a difficult place. Maybe we have to try to sort through and figure out to look and see where God is in those moments and in this life that we have been given. So why is the Transfiguration important, besides the things I've already mentioned? Well, I do want to say this. I don't want to, in saying that God is filled, you know, is with us in the highs and the lows and all of the time, I do want to acknowledge that we do have mountaintop experiences in our lives. We have times where we feel really close to others, where we feel really close to God, and those mountaintop experiences, if we're being honest, are not easy always to let go of. That's part of our humanity, and that's okay. What I think that we need to work on as human beings is having those framed so that we are not holding on to them at the expense of the here and the now. You know, we have talked numerous times about what has gone on in the church and what is going on and where we're headed and what that looked like. And I think sometimes in the church, and especially recently, we've been forced to let go of some things. Some things that were meaningful to us, some things that really had, you know, that we could have considered a mountaintop experience. And that can be difficult, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that there weren't good things that happened, and it doesn't mean that we have to forget all of those things. But faith is not static. I talk all the time about it's a journey, right? And if we are so focused on holding on to whatever that mountaintop experience is, we are missing what God might be doing in the here and the now, in the ways that God might be trying to speak to us and speak a new word or a different word. That's true individually, and that's true as an organization. And let me tell you, that's true all the way up to the PCUSA office in Louisville, right? It's not just an individual thing. It kind of permeates all levels. We all have to figure out how to hold on to good things, but acknowledge that God is doing a new thing all the time in our lives as well. As one commentator said, it's not a good look when we tell God what is good and what should stay. God has God's own plan. If we stay frozen in one spot, we miss, or can miss, God doing a new thing. We miss God with us. The other thing I think that is important about the Transfiguration, why we, you know, take the time to acknowledge it and worship every year, and why it's a thing in the calendar, is part of this is recognizing Jesus, right? Part of the Transfiguration is he is transfigured, and those disciples, you know, have a sense of, wow, this person is something. This might not be, you know, it kind of reframes a little bit too. So I think a continual question for us as followers of Jesus is, do we recognize who Jesus is? Or who do we believe Jesus to be? And by the way, in light of answering those questions, if we call ourselves followers of Jesus, how does that affect our lives? How does that affect the choices that we make? How do we choose to live our lives as followers of Jesus Christ? Like the first disciples, said a commentator, we will be pressed to ask ourselves who we are and what purpose our lives have. Who are we really? Will we hear our calling to do what we can to fulfill all righteousness, to be a light to the nations, to bring prisoners out of the dungeon? In the end, will we remember who we are? Who are you? Who are you as a follower of Jesus Christ? And how does that play itself out in the way that you conduct your life? Those are questions I think that the Transfiguration certainly asks of us, and certainly for us to consider. I think I will say again, as I have multiple weeks, and will say again this morning, I think as followers of God, we have a place in this world. I wouldn't be doing what I do if I didn't believe that, and particularly in light of some of the ugliness and nastiness and the nonsense that's going on in our world, we have a place in the world to say that we are followers of Jesus Christ, to say that we will be known by our love, to say that we will be known because we love our neighbors. That partly to me is how I think I say, this is who I think Jesus is, and this is who I think I should be in light of that. I'll close by offering this. Transfiguration, a writer said, is not a heavenly escape from this earthly life. The mountaintop experience is not a call to travel to an elsewhere, a vantage point from which to diagnose what's wrong with this life, or a site from which to propose a remedy for our communities. The Transfiguration narrative turns the disciples back to the place they already know, back to the familiar. God's presence transfigures this life. Ordinary revelations are here and there and everywhere, the whole world held in God's hands. gifts offered to us, not as possessions under our control, but as abundant and unpredictable grace. Transfiguration is an invitation to return our communities and to return to our communities and our lives with renewed attention and patience, awaiting the luminescence of the mundane, to attend to the present and wonder at the ordinary, to let this life astonish us with the sacred. It is good for us to be here, right where we are, for this too is holy ground. Amen.